Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery on Round Rock, where we talk about games, comics, and other stuff on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And let's go to the show for this week. This is the Roguecast for Wednesday, May 6th. And as I like to call it, we measure time in comic book time as pre-Free Comic Book Day and post-Free Comic Book Day.
So this would be FCBD plus... Three.
Plus three.
Yeah.
FCPD.
That's the date.
There are several. There's AD, there's BC, and there's post-FCBD.
Yes.
There's also post-crisis. No, the biggest day of the year is behind us. We had a great time. We'll talk a little bit about that as soon as we get through the calendar. But before we do that, the calendar events coming up. This Saturday, May 9th, we will be at the Georgetown Library for Fandemonium. We'll be doing an intro to comics panel about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. We'll be there from at least about 11 a.m. to at least 3 or 4.
All right. Are we going to have? We'll have books to sell, right?
We'll have a booth. We'll have books. We're not exactly sure what we're bringing out. We'll bring some stuff.
And is it, Randy? I can't remember. Is this an all comics thing, or is this sort of a general fandom?
It's a general fandom thing. I think it's comics heavy, but there's other stuff as well.
That's really cool that they're doing this.
Yeah, we like the folks over at the Georgetown Library. We're excited to be partnering with them on this, and it should be a fun time to come out. If you have not been out to the Georgetown Public Library, this would be a good time to come out. Then on the next Monday, May 12th, we're going to be having our ladies' night at Star Coffee. Did I say 12th? I meant 11th. The 11th.
My God, Randy.
And then Tuesday, May 12th, we'll be doing Reading with Rogues at Mesa Rosa with Why the Last Man Volume 1. The next Monday, May 18th, we'll be doing over at BJ's Brewhouse, Gaming with Rogues, playing Super Fight, which I'm hoping to come out for. I've missed the last couple. Super Fight is a ton of fun. Definitely worth coming out for that one.
It's basically the best game ever.
You know, you jokingly say that, but...
But it might be the best game ever?
I think it's the best party game ever.
Right. I think, like... I mean, you know...
A lot of people will say Cards Against Humanity, and that game is a lot of fun.
Well, I mean, I think there's legit ones in the past, like, I don't know, Pictionary or something like that.
Sure.
No.
Superfight's better. Although I would say, have you done... God, what's that one called?
I know the one you're talking about.
The one where it's like the Whisper games.
Telephone?
Yeah. You draw... it's... I don't remember. Illustrations.
What it's called. Thank you. That's Telephone is what I need to remind me. That is a phenomenal game.
I've never played Telestrations. I've only heard tales.
Just take my word for it, Nick, and disagree.
Telestrations, but Super Fight's better. Anyway, then there's Free RPG Day coming up on Saturday, June 20th. We'll have a variety of RPG stuff to give away for free that day. And then the week after that, June 27th, is All Ages Awesomeness 5. Fifth year of us doing this.
Yeah.
We did the official announcement of Free Comic Book Day, announced the lineup. Long and short of it is it's from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. We're going to have 8 different artists sketching at various times. We posted
that
this.
Should allow for them to be able to breathe a little bit.
Yep. We posted the rough signing schedule on our website and Facebook. The two guests from out of town this year are Tom Baland, who you might know from Image Comics' True Story, Swear to God, or IDW's Chikacabra. But he does a ton of... cool sketches and stuff online.
He's also worked for Marvel doing some.
He has worked for Marvel.
I bet if you were to look up his blog or if he's got a Tumblr.
Yeah, he's a Tumblr.
You'd be able to see, like, the pinups he's done are amazing. Do we all own one from him?
Everyone but Nick.
Rub it in.
Everyone but Nick owns one.
What character would you have gotten if you had been lucky enough to... No, but I'll say this. The sketch I got from him some years ago, which was colored pencil, is going to be much more elaborate than the kind of things he'll have time for at our event.
Yep.
But it is one of my favorite pieces of art I own. I love it.
Yeah, Tom's a great artist. You can find – we've got links to all these artists over on our website. You can go link over to their Tumblr page, look at their art. The other artist who is our out-of-town artist is Stacey Lee, who is the artist on Marvel's book Silk, which we all really like, and she's great.
Yep.
Go look at her webpage. She's got some great art up there. Then we're having a bunch of local artists come in. Jesse Jordan and Isaiah Broussard are coming in from Houston. From Dallas, we've got Devin Kraft, Evan Bryce, who's been with us every all-ages event.
Evan's great.
Jake Eckes, who is in Space Gun Studios with him, or was. And then, of course, our own Matt Frank, who will be here for the afternoon shift. So
Matt Frank, like Evan, is a great guy.
He's been here several times. He draws Godzilla, and is going to be closing out his Godzilla run this year. So.
Yep.
So it's going to be a good time. As always, as we say, tell your friends, tell your enemies, make sure and come out for this. It's going to be a lot of fun. So Free Comic Book Day, guys.
Went well.
Yeah.
I don't know if people know, and we may have mentioned this in the podcast, but for us, it's like not just in traffic, but sort of in sales too. It's bigger than Black Friday.
It is. It's bigger than Black Friday.
So we're still, I don't know, I feel like I'm still somewhat exhausted.
Yes. Well, and traditionally none of us sleep that well the night before.
Yeah, which I think more or less held true.
Yeah.
But it came off well. We were able to maintain our stamina during the day, and I think everybody had a great time.
Yeah, we gave out 5 comics a person.
Yeah.
The people who got here early and were in line before we opened, we gave a bonus all new Avengers to them.
That was fun. We should do that again.
Yeah, we'll probably do that again next year. We'll pick a book, and if you're here before we open, we'll bring a book out there.
We also had a giant oversized Avengers identity card. Yes. With a little head cutout, or the cutout in it where the photo of the face would be on a little card, so people could hold it up in front of them as if they had a little and put their face on an Avengers membership card. Yeah. So we passed that down the line. People seemed to enjoy that.
Yeah, it was really cool. We had, as always, a lot of kids come in costume, which is always adorable.
Yes,
Deadpool stopped by.
And then we had a customer come dressed as Deadpool and pose very gamely for a lot of photos,
yes,
including my favorite one, Dave, where you gave him a copy of Smurfs.
And we decided that if he held it sideways as if he was looking at a pinup.
And it was hilarious.
He came up with a reaction, which is, you know, he's like, you know, like has his hand over his mouth like he's been
scandalized.
Scandalized. That's the word I was looking for.
Yep.
Like, oh my.
Yeah. If you go to our Instagram and our Facebook and our Twitter, you'll see all the various pictures we took through the day. I think we did a pretty good job keeping up with it this year.
So, yeah. And the kids were great. All the parents who had let their kids cosplay and who sometimes matched with them did a great job. And thank you.
Yeah. We appreciate everybody's patience. It's a lot of lines.
And everybody was like, it's such a good sport about it, too.
It's kind of fun to be in line that day.
Because the line has grown every year.
Yeah.
I mean, this year it was longer than it was last year. And I continue to expect that every year.
But, you know, I was sort of happy to hear that. It seems like it still moves briskly and that people... No, I didn't see people getting frustrated.
No.
I saw a couple kids get frustrated, right. Little kids.
You know what?
I saved
a little kid with a balloon, though.
Oh, very nice.
He would look like he was right on the verge of a tantrum. He was crying a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think I saw him pointing... I heard his mom mention the word balloons, I'm sorry you can't have one or something.
Yeah.
So I went over and I'm like, would he like one of the balloons?
Yeah.
And she looked like I just offered her $1 million. And I brought the balloon over and it fixed everything.
Yeah, for the record, if you have small kids, or even if you are a small kid at heart and you would ever like one of the balloons, we put them up for decoration, but they're always, at the end of the night, we're going to get rid of them. Yeah. So if you want a balloon, ask for a balloon.
I have to quick tell the balloon story.
Okay.
A few years ago, we had closed down on Free Comics.
This was All Ages Awesomeness.
All Ages Awesomeness, where we also had balloons. Everybody had gone home. I was over at my sister's. I got a call.
Not everybody had gone home.
We'd gone to dinner.
Most of us were at dinner with Ty Templeton.
But we all left the store.
Yeah. Well, we were at dinner with Ty Templeton and Evan and a bunch. We had like 20 people at that dinner.
Yeah, it was pretty
bad. And we were about finishing up dinner. Dave was at home.
I was at my sister's.
You're at your sister's. And a phone call came.
From our security people saying that the alarms were going, the motion detectors were going off in the store.
Yep. And I got one too. We were at a restaurant. We had to quick pay the bill and rush out, bring Ty back up here.
We got here and we're like, clearly there's been no breaking and entering. It all looks fine. And then I think when the AC came on and I suddenly saw all the balloons drift forward by about 2 feet.
Yep.
The problem came to light.
Yep. We had left the balloons up and they were setting off the motion detector whenever the AC blew them
around.
This had never happened before.
Yeah, that was on us, but it was kind of it was
kind of
hysterical. Although at the time, I don't think I felt it was hysterical.
Oh, actually, I think it was pretty hysterical at the time. Once we realized it wanted a break, and we were so relieved, I think
I had rushed to a birthday party or some sort of family celebration at my sister's, and so it was less fun for me.
Yeah, we had to just cut dinner short and got up here and saw all that. So, yeah, the balloon story. But anyway, we gave around, you know, about over 5,000 comics, had just a great day.
It's always like a swell of goodwill.
Yep.
People seem to really enjoy kind of picking these books out. I have fun giving suggestions, and everybody seems to be in just like a really good mood that day.
Free Comic Day, it's a lot of work for us, a lot of stress, no small amount of money.
Yes.
It is, but it is always worth it. We're always happy, and everybody seems to have a great time. So thank you for making our 14th Free Comic Book Day a success. Couple bits of news, and then we're going to go on to a pretty topic-heavy podcast this time out. There have been a couple pictures released on the internet.
Yep.
Actually, there's lots of pictures released on the internet, but the ones we're talking about...
We're not talking about the dirty ones.
There's a picture, a selfie snapped of Jubilee and Jean Grey.
Jean Grey, yeah. I think on set for the X-Men movie.
Yes.
Yeah. And while I'm not the biggest Jubilee fan in the world, in fact, you might say I'm not really a fan at all, but I don't hate her. I thought it looked good. I mean, she is literally in her 90s costume.
Yep. Yep.
Did she have the glasses, though?
She did. They show the glasses.
But there's another picture separately of that.
Yeah, I was figuring they probably popped up on top of her head.
Yeah.
You know, it's set in the 80s, which was like the decade of Mallrat, even though it also followed into the 90s. So her particularly bright colored clothes seemed like a perfect fit.
Yep.
And the actress looks like
her. And the actress who's playing Jean Grey is the actress who plays Sansa Stark on Game of Thrones, and she looks good. Yep. They look to be having fun. It's a good photo. Then there's another photo of the Suicide Squad, which we have mixed feelings on, and by we, I mean I hate it, and you guys did not hate it.
I found a lot to like in there. I think some of the critiques of it are good critiques, because...
And some of them are whiny baby Randy critiques.
My favorite critique is someone who posted it up with along the bottom, a Spirit Halloween store now open, 20% off all costumes, which pretty much encapsulates everything I thought about that picture. It looks cheap. It looks doesn't look like superheroes or supervillains. It looks like every DC thing that they're embarrassed of.
You know, I think if you looked at those costumes individually, I think you would change your tune. Altogether, they are kind of a little bit, gray, shades of gray and brown and stuff like that. But like, I don't think Deadshot's costume looked cheap.
Well, no. I saw Deadshot with the helmet. Have you seen that picture with Deadshot with the helmet?
I think I did.
And it looks like Wild Dog to me. That's obscure DC character Wild Dog. Which, by the way,
said it looked like a hockey mask.
If they made a Wild Dog movie, I'd be okay with them looking like Wild Dog.
But here's the thing: this is just a still photo.
Sure.
I know we all had the same feelings when the first X-Men movie came out. That we were like, "Oh God, those costumes
looked
there,
locked awful, and they worked well in motion." Yeah.
Yes, they did. And I think this could be another one of those cases where. They don't look fantastic in a still photo. And actually, I think I disagree with that. I think some of them, like, I thought Captain Boomerang looked fine.
I thought Harley looked pretty awful.
I thought Harley looked fine.
Yeah, Harley looked fine for what she was. It's not the version of Harley that I want.
Yeah.
But I never.
Oh, no, we weren't going to get the Harley Quinn costume.
I mean,
I knew that.
This is going to be sort of the one with the scantily clad fishnets with the purple and red. Yeah. It's like what the Suicide Squad looks like now.
I gotta say, I was more on board with Hot Topic Joker than I am with the Spirit Halloween Suicide Squad.
I would say I like this Harley Quinn over the Arkham video games Harley Quinn.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh, okay.
Where she has sort of like what I would say look like kind of slutty Renfair costumes.
I guess she's wearing a shirt that's like Daddy's Little Girl. There's some messed up messages in there, Harley Quinn.
Yeah, Harley Quinn is supposed to be kind of.
But I thought, I thought Killer Croc looked fine.
Yeah,
looks okay.
Croc and whoever there's some of those guys definitely look like they're sort of street thug versions.
Well,
of
the other one next to him, I think, is El Diablo, which
sort of a newer character.
He's a newer character.
He was in the new Suicide Squad, not the original.
Right, we think that there was like Enchantress in there.
Yeah,
she's
Enchantress,
the one that I'm like. She looks like why is she wearing a moon on her head that looks like?
She looks like she came out. No, that's Katana.
Moon. No. She actually Enchantress.
Her name is June. Her name is June Moon.
I know, but let's not.
She looks like she's out of the ring. I mean,
she does. That I will agree.
Yeah, in the comics, she usually looked like sort of a seductive witch in green.
Yeah.
I guess they weren't going to go for the witch's hat, though, were they?
No, it was never going to happen.
It's too bad. It could have been fun.
And yet, I found the interpretation of Katana to be the most, from the actual comics.
Well, from the modern comics, but I actually prefer her pre-New 52 costume, which we're never going to see again.
I've only seen glimpses of Katana, like, she's on Arrow, right?
Yeah.
I think I saw photos from there, and I've actually liked both of them.
It looks like the same costume. It looks like the New 52 costume. It's the most true to it. It's just that I don't like the New 52 costume either.
Really, I think the Katana one looks great.
It's okay. I like the original one better.
I was a little more mixed on it, but maybe in these still photos, at least, I think it looks better than the comic.
The thing for me with Suicide Squad is that this is maybe my favorite comic ever, and they are not going to give me what I want.
You know, what's one point to remember is most of the latter half of the Suicide Squad of the comic, the run we liked, was basically them in plain clothes.
And that's the thing. If this was plain clothes, I'd be more okay with it. But it's like Hollywood dressed up plain clothes.
Some of the ones that I think people are saying look cheap are just like Croc and stuff like that, just like dressed in what looks like he would be hanging out at a supervillain gym or something.
Right.
Yeah.
I honestly think, this is going to be a hybrid. I think they're going to utilize some of what Ostrander did in his Suicide Squad stuff. They're going to be taking a lot from New 52. I think it's weird and a little bit telling that Joker's not included in this team pick.
I
think,
probably want him to be a crazy wild card.
I think he might be like the villain of the piece in a lot of ways.
That would be interesting if Harley ended up somewhat going having to go against him.
They've done that before. They did that in Harley Quinn Abe, where Joker's trying to blow up the to save the nuclear bomb.
Right.
Which is the best Harley Quinn story ever. It's in the Batman animated series.
But, I mean, we might get some version of that where they're at odds.
Well, if she became sort of like, you know, like in the comics she has a thing sort of for Deadshot, which sort of makes sense given his death wish. If they have a thing in the movie, which will, by the way, be the second time that Will Smith and whoever that actress is have been
Margot Robbie? Yep, because they were
in the Con movie.
Yeah, most recently.
Then it would be interesting to then see, you know, her having to choose between Joker and Deadshot, and I feel certain she'll choose Joker, but it would be dramatic.
Yep. I'm extremely skeptical at this point, but I would sure like it to be good. Part of me is still just happy that there is a Suicide Squad movie. Right. That maybe we'll get a collection of the original comics.
I think that whatever one's take on the costumes are, the ultimate quality of the movie is going to come down to probably script and somewhat to direction, but largely to script.
Yep, agreed. All right, so we'll get a quick, take a quick break, and then we'll be back to talk about comics for this week. We are talking comics for the week of Wednesday, May 6th, and this week is probably most notable for Secret Wars number one, Marvel's big launch of their big event.
Free Comic Book Day saw the release of Secret Wars Zero.
Yep.
And why not just have it the week after they hit you with number one?
And if you miss Secret Wars number zero on Free Comic Book Day, anyone who buys Secret Wars number one will get a copy of Secret Wars number zero from us for free.
If you are very early in the day.
Yes, if you come in early, there is a super cool Scotty Young lithograph.
Yes, which is, as always, hilarious.
A ton of fun.
Can we say what it is?
It's Dr. Doom playing with action figures.
Yeah. Little baby Dr. Doom playing with action figures. There's like a little broken Cyclops figure and a big Sentinel.
Reenacting his own version of Secret Wars.
It's fantastic.
And then there is one of the coolest promos I've ever seen.
It is referred to as a battle board.
Battle board,
It looks like a big sort of placemat in a way.
Yeah. But it's nice, laminated.
But it's laminated cardstock. And it actually has all a map of Battle World. And the cover to the first issue of all the different Secret Wars
on the border.
Issues. Yeah. On the border.
Just in case anybody doesn't know, Battleworld is the place the Secret Wars will take place with all its different overlaid timelines and everything.
And I think the first 40 or 50, however many people, will get that with their Secret Wars number one purchase. It is very cool. So get here early on Wednesday if you want those cool things. But even if you get here late, we will have a Secret Wars number zero for you. And Secret Wars number one will be available for sale. And Nick, what did you think of Secret Wars number one?
It is my pick for the week.
All right.
As, you know, everyone who has been listening to the podcast knows, I actually really, really enjoy Jonathan Hickman. I think he has been telling a very, very long story, and this is sort of a culmination of it. And I think you don't even need that. You can come in on this, and everything is pretty much explained to you.
I just read the first few pages, and I felt like it was pretty approachable.
Yeah, same here. I have not been reading Avengers, but I thought Secret Wars was pretty easy to get into.
And this was pretty... I mean, it starts with pretty much the Ultimate Universe colliding with the 616 Universe.
You know what it reminded me of?
I'm
sorry, go ahead.
No.
In a roundabout way, it reminded me of the part I did like about the original Crisis on Infinite Earths, which was still always overall too kind of dense for me, too much stuff going on.
Yeah.
But there's opening scenes of worlds being destroyed and stuff like that. You see the world where it's like Earth 2 or whatever had this crime syndicate in it in those days. You see their world ending, and it's a very dramatic scene, and it immediately pulled me in back in the day. And this has that same approachability.
I think. Hickman loves to do title cards. And the first one after you read a small prologue is the multiverse is dying, only two universes remain. Today, Earths collide, and it is sort of
a summation of what you're about to get.
Yeah, and it is exactly that. It's basically the heroes of 616 trying to survive as a few of the heroes enact a sort of last-ditch effort to save the world. And the Ultimate Universe is trying to save their world by being a little bit more reactionary. But they've always been sort of a little bit more militaristic.
Well, they're invading with an army of helicarriers.
Yes.
Nick, is this lensed through the eyes of any, like, one or two major heroes,
no,
or is it lots of different
characters? It's lots of different vignettes of featuring different characters.
There's a lot of the Ultimate Nick Fury.
Yeah, Ultimate Nick Fury. There's Thanos and his Cabal, which is all the sort of villainous, like, Maximus and things like
Terax.
That. Another world's version of Terax, yeah. And it's viewed through a lot of just the heroes of the 616, you know, saving people, ultimately trying to take down certain things. You know, Hulk is utilized very well. The Guardians of the Galaxy show up to help out.
People like these characters are going to get to have some fun of seeing them all under duress together.
I think in the original Avengers, the first Avengers movie, everyone got their moment, sort of right. Like big moments. That's sort of what Hickman does here. There's lots of great moments featuring the heroes doing heroic things.
It looks to be it's grandiose. I also see big sci-fi things happening.
Yes, and there is ultimately some character deaths in here. Not like they're going to be changed, I'm sure, by the time this is all over and done with. But the big stuff does really occur right off the bat, and I think it's a great entry point. I think a lot of people are going to have a lot of fun with it. Hickman does great with story, and I think the art by Asad Rubik. I really, really liked it. I think he's been great throughout. I mean, his work on Thor has been fun. And I know, Dave, you were a big fan of his work on Loki.
Yeah, that was his painted thing that he did some years ago.
This is a little more, I don't want to say rushed, but it's a little...
Well, it's more traditional superhero line art as opposed to painted art.
Yeah. So there is that change, but I still think everyone
is going
to
enjoy it. But he kind of brings a grandiose and yet also sort of realistic style, which I think is going to be very appropriate for a thing like Secret Wars.
But it definitely packs the punch people were looking for. It is big, big scale stuff.
So you are primed for... Are the various other ones going to begin next week?
They'll start next week, I think. Yeah.
I believe so.
So, Dave, speaking of science fiction, big ideas, your book this week.
Right. It's interesting. This week for me, there are a ton of books I want to read.
Yeah.
Overall, the number of issues coming out is kind of small, but the number that I want to read personally is high. Of what I've read so far, Descender, from Image Comics, it floated to the top. It is... Jeff Lemire's sci-fi book. We've talked about it in the past. Mm-hmm. It might have even been my pick.
I think we talked about issue one.
This is the third issue, right?
Yeah, this is the third issue, and it's sort of cutting between two stories. The robot kid who we've come to see in the previous one, who has been shut down for like 10 years, I think.
Yeah.
Who's been reactivated. He's being hunted by bounty hunters to find the link between him and these like civilization destroying, giant robots that rose up.
Right.
Reapers.
Uh-huh. They're basically, they are reaperish. There's
no, they're harvesters, Nick. I don't know what you're talking about. Yes. Not reapers.
The Cullers. That said, even though there is some similarity between that, I don't...
No.
It's just...
Superficial mass effect.
I'm really just joking around.
But... The kid was, like, nearly destroyed at the end of the previous issue, and in this you sort of see while the drill bot, which I really like...
The drill bot's great.
Very, very
interesting. While he's kind of trying to rescue him, he's sort of having an afterlife robot experience, which was very interesting, and I'm sure there will be play a bigger effect, have a bigger role in the plot. That's intercut with scenes of a rescue team being sent in to kind of stop before the... The bounty hunters get him, and the rescue team includes the guy who originally built him.
Yeah, it's really good to see those characters. I liked the sort of opening up of the scope, and it's this art by Dustin Nguyen.
Yeah, it's
really really
amazing
nice.
Amazing art, some of the best art I've seen all year, honestly.
Yeah,
and this it's a big sort of action-y issue. There's several different agendas at work here, but it's pretty straightforward. It's space opera with a little bit more of a. I don't want to say it's not hard sci-fi by any means. But a little bit more than, say, the average one where there's just, like, space pirates and stuff like that.
I think Mass Effect is about the right vibe. Yeah. I mean, it's got that sort of, space adventure, but also just sci-fi.
But I'm just enjoying, like, sort of, every page of this had some, fun character interaction or neat moment or great action scene on it. So it's I feel like it's my sci-fi book of the year at the moment.
This week is my week of, I've realized that all my favorite comics from Marvel are female driven.
Yeah.
And this week there are three of them, but the one that really stood out for me was, Squirrel Girl number 5, which we have talked about Squirrel Girl before. This one is called The Tales of the Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, T-A-I-L-S.
I see.
And this is a jumping on point. If you've never read the book before, you could definitely jump in on this. But basically, her roommate who discovered her secret, now knows she's a Squirrel Girl, is being held hostage by a supervillain along with a few other people inside the head of the Statue of Liberty. And to pass the time waiting for rescue, they start telling tales of Squirrel Girl. Her roommate says, oh, Squirrel Girl will rescue us. And she's like, nobody's ever heard of her, right? And then they all start telling stories. And there's an old woman who tells a Golden Age-style story of her and Captain America and how he abandoned her for Bass Lass. And there's a guy who tells a story about her that is very obviously he's confused her with Spider-Man. There's one who tells a S.H.I.E.L.D.-type story, which is full of acronyms. And then they have, of course, the actual Squirrel Girl show up. It's like I say, it's like three or four stories at once. It's sort of that Rashomon style where everybody's telling a different story.
Right.
Funny.
Well, wasn't there an episode of the Batman animated series that was it the Legends of the Dark Knight one where the three different kids have different views of what Batman is?
Yeah. Yep. It's like that, yeah.
And it's kind of hysterical with a character who's essentially this new kind of, and also kind of, as they clearly acknowledge, kind of obscure.
Goofy and obscure,
having people like, no, let me tell you my Squirrel Girl story.
Yeah, it's really funny. It is my favorite issue of the run so far, and I've been really enjoying this book.
I have not read it yet, but it sounds like a great premise for it.
So definitely worth a look. Also this week on my list, Spider-Woman number 7, which continues the new direction and has been just fantastic.
I did read that. That was a great issue.
That was my other near pick.
There's a double page splash in there that is a sequential scene despite being a single
the
image.
The one where she gets where she's like how she did it.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful page. It's like one of the best double page splashes I've seen the whole year.
Yep. There's some really great stuff in here.
And that artist whose name
Javier Rodriguez.
Javier Rodriguez. Easily on my list of my favorite artists of the year.
Then there's Spider-Gwen number 3, and that book number 4. Continues to be a lot of fun. Then there's Amazing Spider-Man number 18, which is sort of the culmination of the first post-Spider-Verse story. Has some big goings-on, has some great story. I really like what they're doing with Anna Maria, his sort of ex-girlfriend in here.
Yeah.
They've done some really good stuff with that character. The second issue of Kane and the Last Padawan, which I really loved.
That was very good.
The issue Ant-Man number 5, which wraps up the first story arc of that and has some really good stuff in it. And then a couple trades for me this week. Usagi Yojimbo Senza, which is Usagi in War of the Worlds. It's basically the Martians invade. It's sort of the last Usagi story. Slightly out of continuity, but is also a sort of nod of a, this could be the ending if there was never another ending. Hilariously opens with a little six-page strip where Usagi talks to his creator, Stan, and is so happy that he's done with 47 Ronin and is doing Usagi again, and Stan has to explain to him, no, I'm actually going to do War of the Worlds now. And it's a funny little strip.
Usagi, from what you told me, is rather skeptical.
He is skeptical. As skeptical as many fans were of Usagi meets War of the Worlds, but this was a great story, and I'm really glad it turned out so well. Beautiful hardcover volume for like $20. Definitely worth it.
You know what's funny is I haven't read regular Usagi in some years now.
Yeah.
I occasionally read a special or a one-shot. I think I may pick this up because, A, I love War of the Worlds. B, it's more or less on its own.
Yep.
And everybody told me it was good. So I'll probably end up picking that up.
And finally this week, the Legends of Baldur's Gate trade, which is Dungeons & Dragons new, brings back Minsk and Boo, who you might know as the loud barbarian and his miniature giant space hamster.
Yes.
And
from the Baldur's Gate video game.
And they have some capers in Baldur's Gate. This is fun and adventure, and it reminds me of what John Rogers did with Dungeons & Dragons back when they restarted it. And if you like D&D and have been wanting sort of a more fun D&D comic, this is a really great one.
There's a great dragon fight in it,
too.
And I like the extras in it. They had all the different painted covers.
Yep.
There's a ton of sketchbook stuff in the back,
yep.
Including... the full sketch page of the hamster.
Yeah, it's a great book. Nick, what else is on your list for this week?
I have the 8th issue of Afterlife with Archie, which was Archie Meets the Shining.
Yeah, they start bringing in different stuff.
And it was really, really fun.
Now, what's funny is, it's Archie Meets the Shining, but it is still in continuity. I mean, it's still part of the zombie story.
But it utilizes a sort of scene from The Shining as sort of its framing device.
Yeah.
And it works really, really well.
Yep.
Man, Frank Avia's artwork is still beautiful, and Roberto Aguirre Sacasa just continues to amaze with these characters.
It's a great book.
Also, the 18th issue of Nathan Edmondson's Punisher, which I have to say was one of the darker...
it's pretty dark.
Pretty dark story, but it was fantastic. A new sci-fi book from Boom called Arcadia.
I haven't read it yet, but the interior looks stunning.
It is.
And it seems like this year is kind of a little mini renaissance for sci-fi books. It might be worth a look.
The fifth issue of the Guardians team-up book is actually Rocket Raccoon teaming up with the Pet Avengers.
Yay.
Yes, the Pet Avengers.
Yeah, make sure to point that to Amanda. I know Amanda loves the Pet
Avengers. Flipping through it, it looked like a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, it looks great. It's got art that's very akin to, like, Scotty Young.
Yeah, it looks like Scotty Young stuff.
Cosmo the Space Dog is in it.
Nice.
So, I mean, what's not to love?
Yep.
We were trying to figure out what Speedball's cat's name was.
His cat's name is Niels.
Niels.
It should have been named Hairball. Speedball and Hairball.
The first issue of the new book, Swords of Sorrow, which is Gail Simone's new book that I think teams up Vampirella, Red Sonja,
and like, a, like
Deja Thor's from Warlord of Mars. Like, it's all the Dynamite
like
heroines.
10 or so, you know, like butt-kicking ladies of, of the Dynamite line.
Yep. And it's Gail Simone, so I'm sure I haven't read this one yet, but I'm looking forward to it because I do like Gail Simone. And then one final book, which is actually a trade this week, is the second volume of Rat Queens.
Finally. People have been waiting on that.
Which I'm super excited for. I've weirdly read the tail end of the story because I wanted to see what Stejan Sezic's artwork was all about.
Yep.
But I'm excited to read it, and it's in full story. So,
yep.
Yes, I'm excited for that.
You know, there's not a quite as big a renaissance of fantasy comics going on now as there is for sci-fi.
But with Rat Queens and Baldur's, D&D.
The Baldur's Gate one, and I'm sure ElfQuest back in print.
Birthright.
Birthright, yeah. It does feel like there's a little boom in that, too. I mean, well, in general, I guess other genres than superheroes are simply flourishing.
Yeah, right now there's you can get other genres of comics, which is kind of cool. What else is on your stack, Dave?
I've got just a handful that y'all haven't already mentioned. One is the Wonder Woman 77 special, which is a tribute, of course, to the 1977, the 70s era Wonder Woman, Linda Carter, the icon. Yep. I flipped through this, and it's like a $7.99 special, but it's super giant.
Yeah,
and it actually looks really well done. In some ways, I think this is especially like what some parents and the kids that they've told about Wonder Woman over the years have talked about.
This is what people want.
I think this is the Wonder Woman they're looking for.
It's kind of too bad this is not an ongoing like Batman 66 is.
I bet there will be more.
Maybe.
There's several different artists involved, but
they're all good.
They're all good, and they all did a good job of capturing like the likeness of Linda Carter and kind of capturing the fun of the show, you know, without like, you know, it's not like wildly campy, but it's but they got the fun part,
and it's also written by Mark Andreyko, who has, you know, written Batwoman most recently, who worked on Manhunter, so he's a really great writer.
Yeah, he's got some bona fides.
Mm-hmm.
And then lastly, there's just some Convergence issues. This month is this will be the final month of Convergence.
Mm-hmm. The second issue.
We're going to see the second. Yeah, these are the second issues, and will tell us how these fights end and like also kind of what the consequences are.
Yeah, I'm most curious about sort of how they bring these to a close and what are the consequences. Yeah.
The among the ones that I know that I want to read this week, The Question from Greg Rucka. Nightwing and Oracle that Gail Simone was writing, the Batgirl one, Harley Quinn one was a little weird, but I liked enough of it that I'll check it out, and the Superman one that Dan Jurgens was doing that had that fairly stunning art. Although I guess it's a different artist on this one.
Oh, really?
The second one. Yeah, it actually looks really good. It reminds me of sort of, I don't know, maybe Dan Jurgens at his peak or something. But
Norm Ratmond?
I guess so.
Okay.
Looks pretty
good. A Liefeld inker back in the day.
Well, his stuff does not resemble it anymore. It's Norm Ratmond. Oh, Dan Jurgens was the artist.
Ratmond distinct. Okay, got it.
So when I say it looks a little bit like Dan Jurgens at his best,
probably because
it's
Dan
Jurgens.
At his best.
At his best, yeah, or with a good inker. So I'll be curious to see how those fare.
All right. That'll wrap up comics for this week. We're going to be back in just a second to talk about a lot of topics we've been neglecting for the past couple weeks.
Yeah, a little bit of catch-up.
All right, it's topic house cleaning. We have had a lot of news to discuss the last few weeks. This week was a light news week. So we are going to talk about a whole bunch of stuff, games and movies and video and TV and that kind of thing that we've been watching. We're going to close out. We're going to take a break and then close out with our Age of Ultron spoiler review. So we'll give you a warning before we get any spoilers on that. But the quick short version is we all three saw it. We all three liked it.
Yep. I've seen it twice, actually.
My God.
But before we get to that, Nick and I sat down with some people and played Dead of Winter, the board game, the first time.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of fun.
It was. It was a great time. You know, just more recently, before that, we had played Battlestar Galactica, and I found that these two games had a lot of similarities.
Yeah, they're all cooperative with the traitor mechanic.
Yes.
You spent a lot of time trying to just sort of survive. The threat of the zombies is almost less of a threat than the potential of someone sabotaging you.
Yeah, what y'all told me about this game, just like premise-wise, is that you're essentially a colony of survivors. Right. Mm-hmm. You're trying to sort of manage it. And you periodically kind of go on scavenging runs.
Well, because they're not only a colony trying to survive, you also have your own goal in which you have to have in order to win the game.
Oh, right. Yeah. Is it like a secret goal?
It's a secret goal.
Secret goal. So every turn, we had it set. I believe the game was set to six morale. No, it was
seven morale.
Seven morale and six rounds. We had to survive six rounds without the morale dropping to zero. The morale drops whenever a character dies. Whenever you run short on food.
Yeah.
And one of the big goals is every turn you've got to put enough food cards down. And then there'll also be challenges like you had to put fuel down or
tools
or whatever. And when you put down the tools for the challenge, you put those face down so the saboteur can sort of wreck you that way.
Yeah, because those get shuffled.
Like Galactica, the face down mechanic for some of those.
But if they're too blatant, it's pretty obvious to figure out, oh, there's a traitor, and then you can figure out who it was.
Yeah, and each round is sort of designated with a sort of crisis.
Yep.
And that you have to fix that crisis by finding whatever you need by venturing out into the dead of winter.
Yeah, there's a dice you roll that can give you wounds or a zombie bite or frostbite. Frostbite is bad because frostbite will kill you in three rounds unless the doctor cures you. Zombie bite is really bad because if you're coming back into this happened to me. If you're coming back to the colony and you get bitten by a zombie, because you have to roll every time you travel. You basically could infect and destroy the entire colony. So when you get back, you have a choice of either one, the next character to you dies and that cuts off the infection, or that character lives and then everybody has to keep rolling until someone dies.
Yeah.
And it could keep wiping the colony. So basically when my guy died from a zombie bite, he killed my other character too. And I had to get a new character. And that basically made it impossible for me to win the game with my goal. So I was just playing for the group goal. But there's a lot of stuff going on.
I think one of the most unique mechanics that this game brings to the table is sort of their Crossroads mechanic.
Yeah, the Crossroads is sort of the name of the game mechanic. They're going to be doing a sci-fi one.
Right.
Crossroads is basically there's a card that you pull up, and the person on your right has the Crossroads cards every turn. And it is for the player who's currently playing. And it may be something like, okay, this activates now because it's when you're in the colony. Or it might be – some of it has like the name, and if you're playing that character – a thing happens.
Now there's a trigger that will set.
And when the trigger goes off, you read a little bit of story, and then you have a choice to make. And the choice can be something like it can be either good or bad, or it could be bad or really bad. And it's a lot. It's sort of a little bit of a storytelling element to it. Dave, I think knowing your penchant for storytelling in games, I think you would really dig the Crossroads mechanic.
They're all sort of moral dilemmas that you have to sort of like what Mass Effect or even what Battlestar Galactica gives you on some things.
Right, right.
And you sort of have to choose. Either sometimes it's you yourself who chooses. Sometimes it's actually the entire group who has to vote.
When all was done, did you guys feel like sort of like? Like it presented a narrative.
Yeah.
Like you could look back on it and say,
and
sort of the same way you could look back on a Galactica game and sort of be like, well, this is what happened during this season in which the humans all died.
Yeah, I think it actually
very much
does,
so. Yeah.
Really promote a narrative.
It's cool.
And for the record, one of the first time players, it was only one person who played it.
Yep.
The other four of us had not played it before.
Yes.
One of the new players was the traitor. And revealed himself late in the game. We thought there was no traitor.
Yeah, for the
longest time. He played it very close to the vest. And then he revealed himself. Unfortunately, when you reveal yourself, if you get exiled, which we did, we knew he was a traitor, we exiled him, you get a different goal. So he was not able to win his goal either. So nobody won.
Yeah, I found
the zombies won.
But the zombies won, because we all died.
Yeah, it was awful.
I remember the first time I played Shadows Over Camelot, or one of the first times, and that's a game, of course, with a traitor mechanic, too. Maybe the first of its type? There might have been. There's probably something before that.
It was one of the first.
But it preceded Galactica.
Yeah.
Our friend Randy Lana,
yep,
was the traitor in one of the ones I played. I don't know if it was when we played.
It wasn't.
You.
There was no traitor.
Okay, it was the second. That was a different game. And she, we were all basically newish to the game, and yeah, she just fell right into the role. It really seems to happen in these games, and it is fun to play. I've
never played the traitor. I keep wanting to be the traitor because I'm sure it's a very different game. But yeah, Dead of Winter, it is unfortunately one of these games. It's really hard to come by. Whenever we get it, it sells out immediately. We're trying to get more. But when it comes in, snap it up. It was a ton of fun.
I was going to say, if you've read any reviews or if you know this is on your radar and you see it on a shelf,
buy it.
Yeah. It's that good.
And yeah, I really, really dug it. Another thing, Nick, that you and I have in common is that I watched, then you watched Let's Be Cops.
Correct.
Because it's on HBO right now.
It is.
And this is... It stars Jake. Isn't it Jake?
I'm blanking on his name.
It's Damon Wayans Jr.
Yes.
And then I always want to say his first name is Jake, but I don't know. They're from New Girl.
Right.
They play a couple of slacker types in their 30s. Who one of them works at a video game company. The other one, I don't even know what he does.
Yeah, he basically is a guy who just like he's a layabout.
Yeah.
He has
and
no
they go back to their high school reunion. They think it's a costume party. They wear cop costumes. And then people start mistaking them for cops, and they decide to go ahead and pretend to be cops.
Because that works out.
And hilarity ensues.
Is it a TV show? Or is it
it's
a movie.
No, it's a movie.
Okay, I was going to say, it seems like a hard thing to sustain for
a
show. But no,
it's a lot of fun. There's a bad guy. I don't want to reveal who the bad guy is, but there's a bad guy who shows up who's really fun, sort of scenery chewing. It reminds me of, and it's not this good, but it reminds me of what I liked about, say, Running Scared or Beverly Hills Cop, the sort of mix of action and
before
comedy.
Before I watched that and you'd mentioned those movies,
yeah,
I'm like, oh, I love those movies. Those movies are great.
I did.
And therefore,
I did mention when I was saying, I said, it's not that good.
Okay.
But it's too late, Randy.
It's too late.
Those movies are so awesome.
I don't think I heard that secondary part. So my expectations were a little higher than that.
Higher than mine, because I expected it to suck when I started watching it.
And I just found it to be fun. I mean, nothing like super memorable
in
a lot of ways.
No, I think that's true. And I think the thing is, we have different expectations.
Yes.
I knew going in, I assumed it was terrible, but I liked those two actors. So I'm like, I'll watch it and see it. And I wound up really liking it. It has that mix of legit action and comedy. I thought some of the stuff was really funny. Keegan-Michael Key has an extremely funny sort of small part.
It's funny because you said that there's like some like somewhat serious elements to it.
There are some serious
elements. And yet the premise you're describing to me sounds like a completely goofy Chris Farley movie.
Well, they get involved in sort of an actual like drug running operation that's that the cops have not been able to bust.
Okay.
And they decide that they're going to go ahead and help the cops.
We're saying disguised cops who have to sort of end up doing something real cop-like just sounds like a skit.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, it's...
In some ways, it does feel very 80s.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
It also, Rob Riggle plays an actual cop, and he's really good.
He's great.
It's got some good cast, and it's a fun movie.
I always remember Ron Riggle as the guy in the first Hangover.
Yep. plays a cop in that too.
Well.
Now keep in mind, he was a former Marine, so he always plays cops and soldiers and that kind of stuff. Dave, I know that you have watched a movie of late as well, which we have not seen.
I don't know what we're talking about.
What We Do in the Shadows?
Oh yeah. This is a New Zealand flick. It's like a little indie horror comedy.
It's New Zealand. It's from New Zealand.
New Zealand. it's from the, I guess the producers of Flight of the Conchords.
Yeah.
And starring them.
Stars one of them, right?
Or one of them. I was going to say, it's like under sort of like the makeup and like the long hair on some of the characters. That could have been the other one.
No, it's the guy who played Jermaine.
Right. I only distinctly saw him, although the manager of the band also has a great turn.
Rhys Davies.
Yeah. So this is a movie about vampires in a small New Zealand town who are kind of a schlubby group of sort of pathetic vampires sharing a flat together. Four vampires. One of them was like a sort of romantic aristocratic count type of guy. One of them is like this 10,000-year-old, very much Nosferatu-looking guy who just like... well, to give you a sense of the humor for it, and they're being filmed as a documentary, so they do the talking to the camera thing, but they argue about like who's doing the dishes and things like that, and they also have issues of like going into town, and there's only like one bar that if when they want to have some nightlife that serves vampires, and it's like this really almost deserted place. They're kind of a bunch of sad sacks. But yeah, when it begins, the guy is like waking up, and then the camera's filming him, and you know, our one of the lead vampires goes over and he's like, oh, this is always the scariest part of the night for me. And he, like, opens the curtains just a little bit. He's like, okay, the sunset. And then he goes and he's waking up his friends, and he goes, he opens, like, a closet that has, like, that Nosferatu vampire in it. Yeah. And he, like, kind of nudges him. He's like, it's time to get up. And he just like, you know, hisses wildly. He's like, okay, a few more minutes. they run into there is a plot of sorts to it, but it's a lot of it is just kind of watching them go about their sort of weird daily lives. They've got a human friend who everybody likes. They're like, oh, he's such a great guy. Well, you know, we should turn him into a vampire, but he seems so cool, we can't do it.
And this sounds very like Christopher Guest style movies.
I would say so. Yeah. They run into, so they're sort of rivals, some guys who are werewolves on the street.
Yep.
Who are headed up by that guy who is their manager from
Rhys Davies.
Flight of the Conchords. One of the werewolves like says something like, "We're gonna kick your ass, man!" to like them, and he's like, "Hey, wait a minute, fellas! Remember what we said: werewolves, not swearwolves." So, the humor is offbeat. It is not a sort of traditional like giant laughs comedy in some ways, but I did really like it, and there are giant laugh scenes. But it appeals to a certain kind of humor, which I would say is people who like Flight of the Conchords. Or just kind of like that slightly more indie comedy sensibility.
Like Hot Fuzz or like...
Exactly. Style. And that's actually like a lot of people. Most of the people I know like Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead and
whatnot.
So this is going to be kind of go under a lot of radars. But it was a ton of fun. I heard some rumors of a sequel and... you know, that's also, by the way, a movie I warmed to a little bit. When I first saw it, I think I was kind of like, that was good, not great. But, like, as I've been thinking on it, I was like, I actually kind of really liked it. And I'm ready for the sequel. So,
okay.
So I would highly suggest renting this one and checking it out.
Dave, you and I also played a movie-related game this week. We played, along with our staffer Amanda, her boyfriend John, another friend, called Cinelinks.
Yep.
Which
by
is
the way, sounds
not
like a
cinnamon.
Microwave breakfast, yes. Breakfast drink.
It is not cinnamon-infused sausage. It is cinema like Cinna, C-I-N-A-N-E.
And links. Find the links between these movies.
It is essentially dominoes, but instead of dots, you use movies and actors and that kind of thing to connect.
Yeah, it's actually a pretty very simple premise, although a little tricky in execution.
Trickier than we thought. So your cards will have anything you'll have.
Let's say, what's the first one that went down?
You start with a genre.
Right.
So you put a genre card down. The genre that went down was thriller, horror thriller, wasn't it? Or was it drama? Might have been drama.
Let's say it's drama. And then, so like on all four sides of that card, from your hand of
there's little half
cards,
reels you connect.
Yeah, you connect. You could so you could connect if you had Schindler's List, you could put that down as a drama. You could not put down Star Wars. For
if instance. You had Martin Scorsese, which I did, you can put it down and say Goodfellas. So basically, you put it down and then you say what the thing comes from,
yep.
And it's you've got directors, and the directors give you bonus cards you can use to mess with the other players. Dave,
what?
Dave,
just 'cause I made you lose a turn,
targeted
and
me
shut
twice.
Your ass down.
Yep. And then there's actors.
Because I won.
There's actors. There's movie titles. There's quotes, which are really hard because the quotes you can only play on the actor or the character who said it or the movie that it's from.
Right.
Most of them you can sort of like jump like a degree or two. Like you can do a like if Mission Impossible is down there and you had Nicole Kidman, you could put Nicole Kidman down and say Nicole Kidman was in this movie with Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible. So you can do one or two degrees. Yep. Yeah.
Far and away.
Also, yeah, you'd have to mention
Days
it.
Days of Thunder.
Yeah.
Right. When we were playing, we allowed ourselves to use IMDb because sometimes you get like a director and you just like, I don't know.
We did essentially open book test. Now, this is what I thought, Nick, and I tried for the first like four turns to not use IMDb. And I did. For like four turns, I did not use IMDb. And then I had to. You cannot play it without a little help.
Although I do think Nick would be very good at this.
Nick would probably be better than the rest of us because he ran a video store.
Although I won, I do sort of feel like I won a little bit by luck.
It sounds like you also utilized the game mechanics against your opponents.
Yes, he did.
There's some fun stuff like when you have like two cards sort of forming a little corner and you've got to drop a card. There's a fun challenge of trying to find something that fits both those cards.
We had a great one. There was one where there was things on all sides.
Was Edward Norton
and
was dropped?
And the thing that we were trying to drop was Edward Norton, and we were trying to connect him to Anthony Hopkins, to something that was obvious, like Fight Club. Tyler Durden, Anthony Hopkins,
But then there was some
and then
weird
the really ones. Hard one was Kiefer Sutherland.
Right.
Trying to find a connection with Kiefer Sutherland. And the funny thing is, we all got so obsessed with this that we were doing the connections, just trying to figure it out. Because it turned out that Jeff had the card, and he was trying to get us to do the work for him. But what's funny is, when he threw it down, he's like, okay, fine. I have Edward Norton. I was trying to get you guys to do it. And then we all did it, because it was just a challenge at that point.
Right.
So
I don't believe any of us begrudged helping him out, because
he came in late, too.
That was particularly fun to do.
Yeah.
And I think this is one of those games that, like, if you took it, like, really seriously, like, too seriously, I don't think it, I mean, actually, I think it'd still be fun, but I think it's a more fun one to play
It's a good party game, just like Cards Against Humanity or Super Fighter, one of those, or Geek Out, and we're going to look into carrying it directly from the manufacturer. We're going to talk to them this week, so.
Yeah, definitely a good one for film fans of any stripe.
Yep. I played a new RPG this last week.
Uh-huh.
I'm actually doing a new show on oneofus.net. Called RPG, Randy Plays Games, and our it's going to be basically a sort of a comedic RPG podcast. We recorded the first two. We're going to record another couple this Sunday. We're going to change up games, but the first one we played was Star Wars: Edge of the Empire, the beginner set, which is it's Fantasy Flight's official Star Wars game.
Yeah.
It's the first one
a couple years.
A couple years, yeah. And it's all you play scoundrels and pilots and smugglers and that kind of stuff. And it basically takes place on Tatooine. The players have gotten in trouble with Teemo the Hutt and are trying to steal a spaceship and get off the planet before his enforcers come after them.
Yeah, you told me some of the behind-the-scenes plot that this was a extant adventure.
It comes in the basic set.
Yeah, and I was like, when you told me about some of the little bits and pieces, I was like, that's like a pretty cool little adventure.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. It comes with four characters, and they always do great production values. There's character pictures and all that. One of them is a droid. He's like a diplomat droid. One of them is a Wookiee bounty hunter. One of them is a Twi'lek. Like hired gun, and then there's a human pilot named Vash, who is sort of a Han Solo type, who the girl who played him as a extreme drunk. They rescued an R5 unit at one point, and she shorted him out by pouring whiskey on him. So it was a lot of fun. I like it. It's got a weird dice pool mechanic where there's like five or six different kinds of dice that do like negative and positives, and you got to do dice pools. And it's a little – it's not as intuitive as I would like, but it was more intuitive than I would have thought.
And I guess that – I gather it's sort of – the intent is to sort of lead to the sort of cinematic situation.
Yeah, so you're like, oh, you succeed, but something went wrong. Or you failed, but there was something good out of it. So what happened?
And, right. Like in the end, it sort of simulates improv-type concepts.
Yeah, it's for that collaborative storytelling that you get from sort of indie games. It's a pretty neat – it's a pretty neat base set. I definitely recommend it if you're a Star Wars fan of any caliber.
I also know several of our customers who've run it and had a good time with it.
Yeah. Nick, you saw Unfriended recently?
Yeah, I saw two movies that I quickly talk about.
Yeah.
Not in super great detail, because I know one Dave wants to go see, and the other Randy wants to go see.
Yep.
So the first one I'll talk about is Unfriended, which is a sort of teen horror flick that actually got some pretty good reviews, so my wife and I decided to check it out. And I will equate it to, weirdly, did you...
Scream 2.
No, Randy will know this, an episode of Modern Family, where everything was told from the perspective of, isn't it Carol? No, her
His
computer
wife.
Screen.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that's what this movie is.
Yeah.
It's all from that one perspective, and you're getting every other character through their FaceTime.
Yeah, isn't it sort of a social media ghost story?
It is a social media ghost story, and I actually think it's executed pretty well overall. It does. It's got some scares, not super jump scares that I would say, some gory scares. But I actually think the acting is all good. I will say that if my group of friends had ever been and acted the way these do, because it's sort of heightened to the degree that it is, man, I would hate to have these friends.
They're jerky millennials.
Yes.
Sorry, millennials.
But I actually think the way it's filmed is, I think...
The novelty you think
was
enjoyable?
I thought it was very enjoyable, seeing sort of, her do FaceTime and, go through her music on Spotify, doing this.
Yeah.
And then seeing those items be manipulated by something.
Yeah, sounds neat.
Okay.
I think even if this movie, even if you had been like, it's just okay, I might still consider watching it just for the... novelty of it.
Yeah, I think it's the novelty. I was overall very happy with it. The other movie, which I was extremely happy with, was Ex Machina, which is the new sort of artificial intelligence story.
Yeah, the buzz on this has been great.
And it's very indie. I mean, it's very kind of low-key, sort of just stars three people. Well, four people, I guess.
Yeah.
And the main actor, which is sort of a bro, kind of the guy who creates everything, I don't know his name, but he's a really good actor. And the other one is Domhnall Gleeson from the,
Black Mirror.
Black Mirror and About Time.
Mm-hmm. Who was he in Black Mirror?
He played the guy who got killed and came back as a sort of an AI replicant.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he is brought in to sort of test this AI by winning sort of a lottery.
The trailers for it were really good and gave you at least that much.
Yeah, it's very atmospheric and very kind of sinister at times, and really ultimately is a question just about artificial intelligence and whether or not it's a good thing.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of these things lately. We talked about Alex and Ada. We talked about the Black Mirror episode. The Descender has elements of that.
Forget Chappie, Randy.
And Chappie.
I think this blows Chappie out of the water, and I haven't even seen Chappie.
By all accounts, it does.
I don't think a lot of people have seen Chappie.
No, probably not. I mean,
But Chappie is going to be Batman now, so.
That's true. There will be Chappie Batman. No, but I loved Ex Machina. I think it was probably one of the best think pieces that I've seen in quite a while.
Cool.
And I highly recommend it.
So it's not just a kind of throwaway pop robot movie.
No, not at all.
Finally, we're going to talk about a trailer from the much-behated M. Night Shyamalan, who has made... We were doing the math, and I believe the last four movies he's made are reportedly terrible.
Yeah.
Like, not just bad, but, like, Raspberry Award-winning terrible.
What were the last four that he made?
Well, there was Avatar, The Last Airbender.
Yeah, that was bad.
The Happening,
Lady in the Water.
I thought somebody liked Lady in the Water.
I think, didn't Dave like...
I think the best I could sum up is say that, like, I liked elements of the first half of it, and then it all kind of fell apart.
And then there was something else I'd even forgotten. Oh, After Earth.
Yeah. I don't even really remember what...
Yes.
The Will Smith and the Sun movie?
Yeah.
I didn't know that was him, but that was awful.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. No, by all accounts, M. Night Shyamalan has not had a good movie, some might say, since Unbreakable. Some might go all the way back to Sixth Sense. I actually like The Village and
Signs
well enough. They're not the best of his movies, but they're okay.
I'll also throw a shout out for the movie he scripted, Devil, about the people in the
elevator.
In the elevator, yeah.
At any rate, it's been a while.
Yep.
But the trailer for The Visit
is a movie about a horror movie about some kids visiting their grandparents, where
scary things are happening. This reminded me of sort of the haunting scares that I got from Sixth Sense, where I can't watch that movie at night. There is stuff that creeps me out in that movie. And this reminded me of some of that stuff, some of that great sort of atmospheric, visually disturbing stuff.
There's a scene where, like, the kids go to sleep and they, like, hear something outside their door at night, and they open it, and what looks like the back of maybe their naked grandmother
scratching
the walls with, like, maniacal animal intent.
Well, yeah. I think, like, their grandfather says bedtime is at 9:30, and they're sort of balking at that, like,
and he says, it's probably best if you stay in your room.
Yeah. It's a nice understatement.
The lines are sort of delivered with that casual slant of just absurdity that you're like, oh, God, that's creepy. Why are you saying such things?
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely this. It's like there's something wrong with the grandparents. There's something weird going on.
You know what I thought was kind of interesting as far as just from what I could tell from the trailer? Is that it looks like the kids through, like, Skype or FaceTime or something that they're in contact with their parents.
Yeah, their mom.
They're their mom, and they're, like, telling her that kind of weird things are going on, but I guess it's kind of being written off as, like, oh, come on.
It's like, they're just old, strange. Yeah.
Yeah. But it seems like this could be a fun one. The premise is fairly straightforward. It may... the last several movies he's made have been apparently stinky, and so the ones I've seen have been.
But maybe twist-free.
But I don't think he's done twists for a while.
No.
Even Devil, which I liked quite a bit, I don't think had a particular twist other than that you were trying to figure out which person in the elevator might in fact be like an incarnation of the devil.
Okay. I think what will set this apart is the notion of the producers who are behind it.
Because
I know the producers are the guys who did Insidious and Sinister. And a few other of those movies, so yeah. They definitely have sort some of a vision have, they like to cultivate.
And, yeah, and those are some of the horror movies that have had cred lately.
Yeah, yeah. I'm excited because Insidious 3 is coming out. I want to see that.
I still need to see the second.
I gotta tell you, when you said Shyamalan, I wouldn't even watch the trailer. But I watched the trailer and I'm like, okay, that looks pretty creepy and interesting. So
just skimming the reaction among friends on Facebook,
yeah.
I saw a lot of people who were like, no more on Shyamalan. And that guy does seem to have kind of used up all his goodwill and then some.
Yep.
And yet, because it's a horror thing and that's something he's been good at before.
I'll probably go see it.
I'm going to be watching the reviews.
I'm curious.
If it's like at 20% on Rotten Tomatoes, I probably ain't going to see
it. No.
But if it's like 60% or better, decent chance I'll see it.
Yep. All right. We are going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back with our spoiler review of Age of Ultron. Like I say, before we get into that, the short version is we all liked it. Go see it. Nick's already seen it twice. I'm sure I'll be seeing it again soon. But if you want to hear our spoiler thoughts, hang around after the next break. Thanks. All right, so the movie that I've been waiting ever since the last minute of Avengers hit has come out, and
what movie?
Oh, Ant-Man?
Chappie.
No, Avengers: Age of Ultron hit this week. We all went and saw it on Thursday night.
Yes.
With pretty much everybody from the staff, as well as some wives, girlfriends, boyfriends, and random adults.
First, I want to say that I really, really appreciate the movie industry allowing them to air movies before midnight.
Yes.
The
night before. Yes.
That has been a huge help for us.
Yeah, a big hug to the movie.
Because we still didn't get out of there until like 1:30.
No, but right. This movie
was Lord of the Rings length.
If we'd gone at midnight, it would have been like 3:15 when we got finished up. Yeah.
And I really do appreciate at least getting out of there at 1.
Yeah. Yeah. This was, I think, the general consensus, we all liked it, but I think, Nick, you liked it a little better than the first one?
I did, actually. I ended up liking it more than the first one.
And I did not like it as well as the first one, but that's mainly because the first one is my favorite Marvel movie.
It's not my favorite Marvel movie.
It's not the best Marvel movie. Winter Soldier or Guardians is probably the best Marvel movie, but Avengers is my favorite. It does exactly what I want. I've always been an Avengers fan, and there's still that bit of, oh my god, they pulled it off.
Right.
No, that no one's going to replicate, I think.
I mean, I think you watched the first Avengers the night before. I watched Avengers, the first one, like right before we're going to see the second Avengers. Yep.
And I have an awareness that the Avengers movie exists.
Yes, Dave has not even seen the Avengers a second time.
Yeah. You know what's funny is, and this is a weird truth, but like of all the Marvel movies, as good as I acknowledge they are, I don't quite have like the hyper enthusiasm. I've never fallen as into them as you guys have.
No.
I like them. I don't generally own them.
Obviously a Cylon.
Yeah, she's a Cylon. Or an Ultron.
But I was pretty happy with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was happy, of course, that it did not follow the Age of Ultron comic book.
Yes.
It staked out its own territory.
Well, and also, I think a lot of us were a little worried, or I think fandom was worried about the whole Iron Man creating Ultron.
Yeah.
And sort of, I actually was very happy with the delivery of that and sort of,
The way they set it up that he created it made a lot of sense. I liked the Ultron in the comics is very much a emotionless, you know, killer robot.
Well, yeah, he's not emotionless.
No, you're not right.
He seemed hateful.
Hateful, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, but he is kind of there's only one mode. He's always hateful and ranting and angry.
Yeah, this one is more of a, he's based off Tony Stark's personality.
Yeah.
So
but he's kind of, he muses over things. He's kind of got a dark philosophy kind of turning underneath there.
Yeah.
Where he's trying to figure things out.
I do think
out.
The scene where somebody compares him to Tony Stark was a very emotional scene where basically he blows up and he's like, don't compare me to that man. And of course, James Spader voicing him, giving him a lot.
James Spader is the guy you cast if you want to do a Robert Downey Jr. evil version, even robot.
Yes.
I mean, it made perfect sense.
What you're saying is James Spader is evil Robert Downey?
Yes. Sure. Yeah, and vice versa.
Whoa.
Yeah, no, he had a great time playing the evil robot.
I actually think he's one of the best villains the Marvel Universe has seen, the cinematic universe.
It's a pretty good villain.
He did a great job.
I thought he was charismatic, but at times I thought his goals were a little bit nebulous.
Yeah. That's probably true.
But that sort of goes with a sort of general thing that, like, if I had, like, a broad criticism like, against the movie, it's that it does have a lot of, it's spinning a lot of plates.
It is.
Sometimes I was, I felt like it was a little bit cumbersome. That said, there was, like, no individual scene where I was like, that was a weak scene.
Yeah,
all, engaging.
I never felt the 2.5 hour length. I never felt long to me. I've definitely been in movies where, even like movies I liked, where it feels long. This one did not feel long. Also, there was there is a lot of stuff like leading up to their movies. They're clearly setting up Thor Ragnarok. They're setting up the Infinity War. There was not a lot of stuff. There was nothing in here where I felt like, oh, that was just a placeholder scene for this. I always felt like it was all a piece of the movie.
Yeah. Well, even from the very
beginning. Introduced, by the way, three new characters.
Yeah. But this is one of the things that one of our friends, John Sitton, said. He mentioned that it is a complete movie. He said, you don't even have to have seen the first Avengers to enjoy this movie. You could watch this as its own movie.
And what that struck me is it reminded me of what I thought Whedon was pretty brilliant at in the movie Serenity.
Yeah.
Which is, it functioned as a standalone sci-fi film. Mm-hmm. If you had never seen it, you got introduced to the universe. But if you had seen it, you also just eased into it and saw it as the sort of fruition of a lot of stuff going on in the TV show.
Yeah, if you saw Avengers, there's a lot of payoff to stuff that was set up in Avengers and character nods and that kind of thing. But it's interesting because it's, even though it's acknowledging stuff that happens in Winter Soldier, it almost functions as a sequel to Avengers.
Yeah.
So, like, you don't have to have seen Winter Soldier or Thor or any of those two, or Thor 2 or Cap 2,
I mean,
or, you know.
The little nods here and there are so subtle or very small that it never, you know, destroys the flow of the movie or anything.
But at the same time, it's very rewarding if you're a fan of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. There's all kinds of little nods and moments. You know, seeing Falcon show up again, seeing War Machine show up again.
I think the thing I was happiest about overall, and this is not a nod, but was the Vision.
Yeah, their take on the Vision was great.
I've always liked them in the comics. I keep feeling like for like the last 10 to 20 years they've been screwing up the Vision in one way, shape, or form.
Yep.
So it was nice to see a version where I was like, even though it was not precisely the comics version, it was a cleaner version of it. It didn't have those continuity glitches, and their Vision of the Vision I liked.
Their origin for him was great. The reason for him to have a cape was great, that he sort of modeled himself after Thor. Yep. There's that great moment with the hammer that was instantly established as why they would trust him.
Yep.
And they got his powers. He can phase through things. Yep. He's got his blast.
Well, you know, the Thor hammer, you know, first of all, that's an example of, I think, clever writing.
Yeah.
It establishes a few things first. One, if he can hold the hammer, they can trust him.
Yeah.
It established a bond with Thor, which allowed for his cape.
Yeah.
In the same way, that's why it makes sense to me that Stark was the designer of Ultron.
Yeah.
Aside from the fact that he's been building all this robotics for like 3 or 4 movies now, it makes sense to do that rather than introduce an entire new character with a new backstory.
Right.
So, I you know, on sort of a purely practical thing, you know, there's already a big movie.
Yeah.
It makes complete sense to me to cut Hank Pym from the Ultron.
Yeah, absolutely.
I never honestly had a problem with it.
Me neither, and I think it made perfect sense. I also thought the Black Widow-Hulk relationship was really interesting and well done.
That was something that was a kind of neat surprise. I didn't know that they were going to do that, and that's never really happened in the comics.
No, it hasn't.
But I thought they sold it pretty well.
I also thought Hawkeye got to be more of a character in this one. They gave him, of course, the big ultimate story where he has his wife and kids and his whole secret life where he's a different guy.
But he also
was the one
person
a little bit.
Really?
The one person who wasn't who didn't get mind control.
Yeah, because that was a great nod. He's like, I've done that before. Yeah.
And he also just got great one-liners. He got really funny lines to say.
They also, their take on Scarlet Witch, by the way, they didn't do her weird probability control powers, which is probably a good thing. Because since they don't have a Jean Grey in this universe and they're not gonna, they basically gave her Jean Grey's power. She has mind control. She has telepathy and telekinesis.
She's weird.
Hers are weirder. That was kind of funny. He's fast and she's weird.
Yeah.
I thought Quicksilver was given a little bit of short shrift, but what they did with him, they did really well, and they paid off pretty well.
Yeah, I thought so too, and I liked them both actors, I think, in those.
They also, there were many moments where I very much cheered. And Nick was sitting next to me and heard how happy I was when the helicarrier showed up.
I think I was most happy that we were shown heroes being heroes.
Yeah, they spent a lot of time evacuating the city and looking out for the citizens.
That's probably a little bit of an answer to the Man of Steel stuff.
Absolutely is.
Yeah, I think we all saw that article floating around talking about how they treated the destruction in a sort of, I don't want to say more mature way, but in a more superhero way.
But they acknowledge the dangers of it. Like when Tony Stark is in the Hulkbuster armor fighting the Hulk, They go out of their way to make sure nobody gets hurt.
Yeah, he's all like, time to get away from the center of the
yep.
city.
And it is the entire crux of the final action scene, which is like a big, you know, 20, 30-minute action scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's also, there's lots of nods. There's Ultraman, when he first shows up, is wearing a crimson cowl,
yep,
which is how he was introduced in the comics. He was a secretive bad guy. He was called the Crimson Cowl.
I heard y'all talking about that earlier, and that would have completely over my head.
Yeah, I didn't notice it until someone mentioned it.
I don't know Ultron's early history that well, other than that he looked like that goofy little rolling robot.
There was also a small little nod to another piece of Ultron lore, is that when Tony was uploading his new AI interface, one of the cards, ultimately he picked the one that said Friday, which we don't know exactly what it was. Probably a nod to His Girl Friday.
Yeah,
or something along those lines. There was one labeled Jocasta. I
have wondered if she was going to somehow show in there, or would even be like a teaser thing. But
I believe that was the teaser.
But Ultron is not dead. You can't. I mean, he'll somehow survive.
But I doubt we'll see him for like a decade. You know, screen time.
I don't know. I mean, honestly, there's
you
not
think that
really,
was the story to tell.
There's not a really need to bring Ultron back. They've got plenty of stories to tell.
But he was unique.
Yeah, but it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. I feel like if they wanted to, like if say, and I feel like Marvel's got their stuff planned out so well that it would be like 10 years from now.
Yeah.
And if they were like, you know, what if the new Masters of Evil are actually incorporating like an Ultron bot as their guard? You know, wouldn't that be cool? And then I could see them bringing it back in some way.
Yeah.
But I doubt it'll be anytime soon.
Yeah. They've got plenty to do in the meantime. There's also, I love the Vision having the gem. The mind gem? Yeah, it's the mind gem, right?
It is the mind gem. It's the one that has controlled people in the first Avengers movie.
I love the action sequences
in
this.
Why was it shooting lasers?
Because it's an Infinity Gem. I can do what it wants.
Okay, fair enough.
Because the Vision shoots lasers out of his head, Dave.
Yeah, I'm happy with that. I'm just saying I wouldn't have thought that that'd be a component of a mind gem.
Well, you know, it's a big power. They have all different powers, so I'm
mind
fine
gem,
with that.
Maybe it's a mind gem energy blast. You don't know.
You don't know.
He was also doing phasing type stuff.
Yep.
I don't know
he's built of a weird vibranium alloy.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I thought they did a great job here, and there's a lot of stuff going on. There's a lot of little nods. Somebody mentioned the Hulkbuster armor. It was codenamed Veronica, which I didn't realize until later. Someone pointed out that, Betty Ross is his love interest, so Betty and Veronica. That makes sense.
Yeah. I just love also really just the downtime with the Avengers.
Yeah.
That was a big part of, I mean, that's always been a big part of like the 80s run of Avengers.
A lot of my favorite
like that.
Scenes in it had to do with downtime scenes.
Yeah.
Well, like I say, the thing that weirded me out about Hawkeye was that in the comics he's such a kind of player.
Yeah.
He's kind of a doofus at it, but, you know, he never seems to be able to settle down. And so having him as the guy who settles down weirded me out a little
bit. But in the Ultimate Universe, he was that guy.
Yeah.
And this makes more sense. He is more the Ultimate Hawkeye. He's the spy badass. He is not the down on his luck, weird, you know, Hawk guy version.
But I loved his outfit, though.
I did too.
That was great.
That he's going to be off the map for Marvel movies for
no, I wouldn't think so.
Okay. I
wasn't sure if he was like settle down or
yeah. It weirded me out a little bit when like Tony said goodbye, and that's like we know he's going to show back up in Cap Civil War and things like that. But you know, not everybody can stay on the Avengers, nor do they want to stay on the Avengers forever.
I like that they have a new base. I like
I will say, by the way, that I do like, since there's lots of characters to go around, I do like the notion of him getting a happy ending.
Yeah.
Just for a little while.
Yeah. Hopefully. No. He's got Pepper. You know, Thor has Jane, and, you know.
Yeah. I like that they have a new base. I like they have a new team.
You love the Quinjet.
I love the new Quinjet. I love the new Quinjet. And I love the Quinjets they came up with for S.H.I.E.L.D. I thought those were awesome looking.
Yeah.
But then I love the new one. It's got the Avengers logo. I laughed out loud in joy when I saw the Avengers logo on the side of the tower.
Yeah, that's great.
I was so happy. As a longtime Avengers fan who has not had Avengers comics to read in a while, since I do not like Hickman's and I don't like Bendis's, and they're not going to ever go back to the Avengers I like, these movies are exactly what I want, and I'm so happy about them. Although Whedon is a horrible mean tease because he closed this thing with the famous line, and he didn't let him say it.
You know who else did that? Patriot Games.
Yeah,
remember that with the baby.
Yep. I remember that. Yeah. I still remember that. Yes.
But I love the new Avengers team
that
we have at the very end. I think it's a very diverse and very fun group of individuals, and I want to see Avengers 3 because I want to see what they can do.
Well, the funny thing is, you know, in Avengers 3, they're going to bring back some of the big ones. There's no way that Thor is not going to be in Infinity Wars.
Oh, no. Infinity War is actually going to be everybody.
But probably what will happen is that we'll show that this has been the Avengers team for a while.
Right. Yeah. They will, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if they show up in Civil War at some point.
Almost certainly, yeah.
But I honestly think Infinity War is going to bring all the superheroes out of the woodwork. So get ready for Netflix to join and all that.
Yeah.
It's going to be a crazy, crazy Marvel Cinematic Universe, and I am so excited for it.
Yep, this is another notch in their belt, and the money coming in, they did crazy business.
I think they're coming up on $500 million already.
Yeah, they've already beat Man of Steel's whole entire total.
I think they should buy us lunch.
I agree. Well, technically they do.
Yeah, technically they do.
Technically technically Marvel buys us a lot of things.
It's true.
You know, in that we sell their books.
But, you know, go see it. Go see it a second time.
Yep.
I'm going to go see it a third time. I'm more than likely.
Yes, we're all big fans. Okay, so that'll wrap it up for us until next time. Yo-jo! And that'll wrap it up for us this week. As always, you can drop us email with topic suggestions, things you want us to hear about, or just comments on the podcast at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at roguesgallery. Check us out on Facebook. Check out our website at www.roguesgallerytx.com. Check us out on Instagram at roguesgallerytx. And if you want to help us out, go over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and a little review. We'd very much appreciate it. And we will be back next week.